Good morning, I'm Anthony Moreno. It's 6:45. A new report says climate change could threaten thousands of homes on the Texas Gulf Coast. The Union of Concerned Scientists says rising sea levels will lead to homes being repeatedly flooded just from high tides. Travis Bubinick has more.
The report says within the next 30 years, about 5,000 coastal homes in the Galveston area alone are at risk for chronic inundation from tides. That would be particularly bad for tourist towns, which depend on property tax revenue from vacation homes to help even out the seasonal ups and downs of their economies. Astrid Caldas, one of the report's co-authors, says coastal towns across the country are going to have to start thinking about how to adapt.
And adaptation involves three main options, which is accommodate the water, protect against the water, or retreat from the water.
She says global efforts to fight climate change could help save many coastal homes, but those efforts could be stunted by the U.S. pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement. In Houston, I'm Travis Bubinick.
If someone is struggling with behavioral health issues, it may be hard for them to reach out and seek help. Some health professionals say that for the Latino and immigrant populations, these struggles may be amplified as they face an extra set of barriers to healthcare access. In the second part of a two-part series, Donna Resendez examines what healthcare professionals say these barriers are and what resources may be available to help.
In a webinar addressing barriers to care with Latino and immigrant families, Fred Sandoval, the executive director for the National Latino Behavioral Health Association, explained the barriers to health care that Latinos and immigrants are facing.
There are three levels of barriers to care that confront Latino and Latino immigrant populations. Barriers at the individual level, for instance, relate to things such as the individual's characteristics, their demographic variables, the social structure, also their health beliefs and attitudes, as well as perceived illness and personal health practices at an individual level can also play a significant role in terms of barriers to care. Barriers at the provider level were related to the provider's characteristics, such as the provider agency's skills and attitudes, the medication access provided by those agencies, and of course, the consequences related to that. The availability and the timely access to providers is also a very significant barrier to care. At the system level, we're experiencing a number of things that relate to these barrier challenges. For instance, what we found is that at the system level are things such as the organization of the healthcare system that looks different from community to community, state to state, and all the variations across different regions in the country. These barriers also result in the structures of the healthcare system, which may include things such as their operating circumstances, the long wait times, the bureaucratic nature of intake and the forms and the procedures, the lack of an interpreter and bilingual services, and then also in terms of geographic location and transportation issues. So you could see just at those three levels alone, it starts to compound the challenges that individuals will face.
Many behavioral health professionals recognize the barriers that Latinos and immigrants deal with, and they are working on solutions. Dr. Pierluigi Mancini, president of the Multicultural Development Institute in Atlanta, Georgia, explains what he believes to be the best practices to help combat barriers to care.
We actually use in-school-based mental health, and we saw kids during the school day. That way they only lost 1 hour of class instead of losing half a day or more to be pulled out of class to go see a counselor. And we connected them with a psychiatrist via telebehavioral health. We also integrated primary and behavioral health. Latinos in particular are very somatic. They may show up complaining of neck ache or backache when the problem may be behavioral in nature. And a lot of this is to avoid embarrassment or to not appear weak. And we need to pay attention to those symptoms. The certified peer support, more and more we're seeing people in recovery being trained to help other people in recovery. It's a fantastic practice that is really yielding a lot of positive results. And then the clubhouse model. The clubhouse model is where we're having non-clinical support services. And this includes for kids, includes tutoring, includes socialization, some micro-enterprises, teaching them financial management. And it's really a wonderful opportunity for young people to develop and to be able to move forward and help them finish high school and go to college or go to work.
Dr. Mancini had mentioned telemental health, which was a huge topic among these professionals. However, not many people outside of professionals have heard of it. Telehealth is actually a simple concept. It's healthcare, in this case for mental health, that is provided solely through the use of communications technologies, like Skype, for example. Dr. Patricia Zoror, a telepsychiatrist, explains the benefits of telehealth care for Latinos and immigrants.
Telemental health services in the Latino and immigrant population is cost-efficient and effective because it provides access to care to population that will not otherwise have it. For example, just to mention something that you might not have thought will be transportation of either the patient to see the clinician or the clinician to be transported to see the patient.
Mental health professionals say that there are many resources out there for Latinos and immigrants who are struggling with their mental health. A list of resources can be found at nlbha.org. For KRWG News, I'm Donna Resendez.